All right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Wednesday, August 16th, 2023. Mike Adams here. Got an interview coming up with David Dubine from Adapt 2030. And it's a powerful interview about the factors going into food shortages and engineered famine. So that's coming up. We're probably going to get to that fairly quickly. But just as I predicted yesterday, bombshell news today out of Hawaii. And here it is from BeckerNews.com. Hawaii government in aftermath of deadly Maui fires, quote, or I'm sorry, this is the governor, not government, but Governor Josh Green, quote, "I'm already thinking of ways for the state to acquire that land." Yeah, burn people out, burn their children, take their land, seize it. Exactly what's going on. He says, quote, "I'm already thinking of ways for the state to acquire that land so we can put it into workforce housing." What? "To put it back into families," he says. Well, I mean, families that are slaves to the state, you know, government-run housing, right? "Or make it open spaces in perpetuity as a memorial to the people who were lost," he said. He doesn't want open spaces. He wants to seize the land. And then, of course, once it's seized, no matter what excuse they have, they can then wait a year or two, let people forget, because people forget pretty easily, and then they can start divvying it up to all their political friends, you know, all the kickbacks and payoffs and everything. And then pretty soon, all that land will shift from the hands of the native Hawaiian people into the hands of corrupt Democrats. Of course. Always. Just like I said. Just like I said, this is so pathetic, so shameless, and so obvious. Not even a week has gone by, and he's already talking about having the state of Hawaii seize that land. I told you that Hawaii was a colonized state, you know, taken over by the United States of America. Stolen, annexed. And now, if they want your land, because, oh, nice little town you got there, be a shame if something bad happened to it. And then the government creates the conditions for massive fires. The globalists run the geoengineering. They produce the droughts, right? All on purpose. They produce all that. When the fires start, for whatever reason, maybe it's arson, maybe it's DEWs, who knows, then they call off the fire department and they block the roads so people can't escape. And then we find out now today, they shut off the water that the locals were trying to use to fight the fires. New York Times covered this. And they're quoting Ross Hart, a resident who stated he was battling the fires with his water hose alongside neighbors and firefighters, and he was doing pretty good. And then they shut off the water. He told the New York Times, "You can't fight fire when you don't have water. Just throwing dirt on it doesn't cut it." Mm-hmm. Firefighter Ka'ahi Ho, who was battling the deadly fire in Lahaina, offered a similar story. I'm reading from the article. Quote, "There was just no water in the hydrants." Uh-huh. Firefighters rushing to slow the spread were distressed to find that their hydrants were running dry. There was just no water in the hydrants. Across the island, in Kula, which has a separate water system, 16 structures were destroyed. Ross Hart said he and others fought the fire for hours, sometimes alone with hoses, other times with the aid of firefighters. But he said as the night wore on, there was no water in the hoses. And so, wait a second, the alarm system didn't go off, the sirens didn't work, the water didn't work, the fire department left. The police won't talk to anybody except they block the roads. And now the state of Hawaii wants to take the land. Eminent domain. Oh, nice little town you got there. Like I said, be ashamed if something happened to it. Friends, we just witnessed mass murder by the government. That's all this is. Somebody in the government wanted the real estate. They wanted the town and they wanted to send a message. And so they burned it down. And now they're going to steal it from the residents using eminent domain. The residents, many of whom already lost their children, who were burned alive in the fires. Not that the Democrats in power give a crap about that. They murdered the children. That's bonus points for them on the satanic scale. They murdered the children. They destroyed the homes. They shut down the economy. That's also part of what they want to accomplish. Left people homeless and starving and desperate. Ooh, more bonus points for the Satanists. And now they're going to take the land. Wow. These MFers. I mean, we are dealing with some evil, evil, evil people who run the government of Hawaii, who run the United States federal government. These are the most evil people imaginable. The United States of America, under the control of these demons, has become the most despicable, the most evil empire in the world today. Even now, surpassing what China does with organ harvesting. Yeah, China arrests political dissidents, throws them in prison, and harvests their organs. In America, they arrest political dissidents and throw them in prison and charge them with completely made up fictitious crimes like what just happened to Trump and all the J6 victims. And in America, they burn entire towns full of children to death. They don't even do that in China. I mean, they might weld people shut in their apartment buildings and deprive them of access to food during COVID, but they didn't set fire to the apartment building and burn the children alive. No, for that, you got to come to America, where the Democrats are in charge. For child sacrifice, mass murder, that's America. Again, they turn off the sirens, they turn off the water, they use geoengineering to create the conditions for the fire, they call off the fire department, they block the roads, you're screwed. Only thing you could do to even survive that was jump in the ocean and try not to drown, which a lot of people did, and that's how they survived, by the way. We are living under unbelievable evil. Wayne Allen Root says, now it's official. I know it. You know it. Everyone knows it. Trump's Georgia indictment is the final proof that the 2020 election was stolen. He says, how do I know? Because both the feds and Georgia just indicted our president for talking about, questioning, and trying to investigate a stolen election. When the communist thugs, bullies, and tyrants make it a crime to question a stolen election in a country built around free speech, it's 100% proof they stole that election. Yeah, he's exactly right. And then at the Gateway Pundit, Jim Hoft is saying, oh, it's time to cut ties with the Republican Party. I think it's way past time to cut. I think that day was, in fact, January 6th of 2021. But Jim Hoft says, in life, when you find out your friend is not there for you, will not defend you, ignores you, betrays you, fails you, and doesn't even like you, you move on. And last night was the last straw. The Marxist horde indicted not just President Trump, but 18 other conservatives, several who President Trump has never met, in a made-up conspiracy that never existed. And once again, the Republican Party is silent, hiding in the corner. Charlie Kirk wrote this on Twitter. Republicans did nothing about Bill Clinton flying to islands with minors. He's talking about Jeffrey Epstein. Republicans did nothing about Hillary Clinton smashing devices, you know, bleach bit, destroying evidence. Republicans did nothing. Republicans did nothing about James Comey brazenly lying, you know, head of the FBI. Republicans did nothing about Andy McCabe plotting a silent coup against a sitting president. They did nothing about Black Lives Matter raising $100 million and breaking charitable giving laws. They did nothing about James Biden's alleged fraud scheme involving a hospital system. In Arkansas, they did nothing about Hunter Biden's myriad crimes. They've done nothing against Antifa and their interstate RICO operations. Republicans have done nothing against Fauci, EcoHealth Alliance, or the other fake scientists. And then he asks, why would Democrats be afraid of us? They run the country, while Republican AGs and DAs quiver in fear and run for the hills. Exactly, exactly. The Republican Party is spineless and useless. And I actually, again, I said this in January of 2021. The Republicans, of course, never even pushed back against the FDA shenanigans depriving people of access to ivermectin. And it's so crazy now that the FDA currently claims that it never warned anyone against using ivermectin for COVID-19. What? What? Do they think that we all forgot? It's a story from MRC TV. It talks about, in the novel 1984, George Orwell. Winston Smith, who works for the truth-hiding Ministry of Truth, thinks the past was erased. The erasure was forgotten. The lie became the truth. That's exactly what's happened with the FDA. The FDA, which tweeted out to everybody, stop using ivermectin, you're not a horse, told doctors do not prescribe ivermectin. Doctors lost their licenses for providing ivermectin to patients. And now the FDA says they never told doctors not to prescribe ivermectin. In court, the Department of Justice lawyer representing the FDA just said during oral arguments on August 8th, quote, the FDA explicitly recognizes that doctors do have the authority to prescribe ivermectin to treat COVID. Well, where's the apology then? For the last 3 years, Circuit Court Judge Jennifer Walker Elrod wasn't buying the FDA's brainwashing. She asked, quote, what about when the FDA said, no, stop it? Why isn't that a command? If you were in English class, they would say that was a command. It was a command. The FDA, by the way, here's the truth about this. The FDA was gaslighting. They were faking their so-called authority. And there's something you need to know about this entire government regime. It's not real. They are faking it. Attorney Todd Callender has been speaking out about this. I did an interview with him on this. Did you know that virtually the entire Biden administration, at least the top cabinet members, none of them, or almost none of them, have oaths. They don't have oaths of office on file. They never swore an oath of office because they are imposters. They are not actually cabinet members. And Joe Biden himself never actually won the election. And the so-called electors of the states that voted Joe Biden into power, they are the ones who committed fraud and racketeering. They should be charged with RICO Act violations because they conspired to falsely to counterfeit documents and push Joe Biden into power in order to stop Donald J. Trump, who actually won the election. Virtually the entire Biden administration, like I said, and many of the agencies today, they have no legitimate authority or power, nor were they even elected, and they do not have the consent of the people. They are faking it. They are bluffing. This so-called recent indictment of Trump and 18 other people in Fulton County, Georgia, that's supposed to be a grand jury indictment. Did you know that they posted the indictment before the grand jury even voted? And then they pulled it off and they said, oh, that was a fictional document. And then a few hours later, they posted it back on and said, yep, now the grand jury has voted. Well, the fact that they posted the document before the grand jury voted tells you there was no grand jury vote on those charges. The charges were leveled. The indictment was achieved by the prosecutor alone without the grand jury vote. In other words, it has no legitimate legal standing. It's bogus. It's counterfeit. It's a bluff. And they know none of these charges are going to stand up in court. This is all a bluff. It's all theater. You're living in a giant Truman Show. Everything that you're seeing is theater. But with real consequences, by the way. You know, for example, the attack on Lahaina was engineered. So there's a theatrical element of how it started. You know, it was shaped, it was engineered, but the consequences are very real. They burned hundreds of children alive. They burned them to death. That's real. And so the theater has real consequences, even though it's rooted in fakery and fraud, that's all that the Democrats have left now is censorship, intimidation, fakery, and fraud. And by the way, the entire money supply is also counterfeit. Fake, fraudulent, not real. The dollar is not real money. You know that. It's just based on bluffery and fakery. The IRS, we've interviewed attorneys and accountants and experts that say the IRS has no real authority, that basically you volunteer to pay your taxes when you fill out the 1040. The EPA was never created by Congress to regulate carbon dioxide. The Supreme Court even ruled against the EPA on that. But they just bluff their way through everything, just like the USDA or the ATF or the FDA. Everything is a bluff. But a lot of people carry out the bluffs. A lot of, you know, state regulators and so-called mid-level authority figures, they carry out the bluffs. And so they make it real. But it's all the Wizard of Oz. There's a little short man behind the curtain pulling levers, telling you, be afraid, be afraid, be very afraid, and silencing you. That's the truth about where we are. This is not a legitimate government whatsoever. That's why they have to be so authoritarian. Because if they had the consent of the people, they wouldn't have to silence the people or imprison the people or burn the children alive, you see. If they had the consent of the people, they wouldn't have to try to starve everybody with engineered famine. They wouldn't be trying to shut down the energy infrastructure. If they had the consent of the people, they would be carrying out the will of the people, which would be the opposite of what we're seeing them do. The will of the people is, hey, stop mutilating children and protect the border and stop weaponizing the DOJ, for God's sake. But they won't do any of that because they don't represent the people. They are thieves. They're con men. Well, and women, in the case of Hillary, of course. They're con men and con women, and all they can do is con. So what you're watching is a giant con. The charges against Trump, a giant con. The money supply, a giant con. The so-called news, a giant con. The plandemic, the vaccines, con, con, con. And they're going to try to con you again in the 2024 election. Also, you know, the war against Russia, another giant con. A giant money printing and money distribution con to funnel money into the hands of their friends and lackeys with ties to Washington, D.C. A male power lifter has set a new women's record. Yes. During the Western Canadian Championship for powerlifters. So this is a biological male with blue hair who says he identifies as a woman, sets the women's national record in Brandon, Manitoba yesterday. Names himself Ann Andres, 40 years old, holds multiple records in the female division, including women's deadlift and bench press, and has placed in 9 out of the 11 competitions he has participated in over the past 4 years. This is from Redux.info. This is how insane the world has become. A man has set women's powerlifting records. You see, because it's all fakery and fraud. It's all a bluff. And you're supposed to just go along with it. It's supposed to drive you insane. It's supposed to make you infuriated. And by the way, do you realize that this indictment in Fulton County of Trump and 18 other people, do you realize that this indictment very likely may have just achieved victory for President Trump in terms of the election? This is probably the tipping point in the minds of many people, even in my own mind. Let me explain. Because of this outrageous fakery, this indictment of Trump and Sidney Powell and so many other, Rudy Giuliani and other people, I am willing to overlook Trump's shortfalls and to vote for Trump should he be the nominee, just to basically give the finger to the corrupt, lying establishment. We have got to rally behind Trump at this point. Because he's a political prisoner in the same way, essentially, that Julian Assange is a political prisoner. And we may not agree with Trump on everything. I have big issues with Trump on, you know, vaccines and Operation Warp Speed and ties to Pfizer and all that stuff. But if the deep state hates him so much that they're willing to drum up these insane false accusations to throw him in prison for the conspiracy of doing things like tweeting for people to read the news or working with someone to reserve, you know, a meeting room. Oh, really? It's a conspiracy to have a meeting room reserved? I mean, these are part of the charging documents, the indictment. If they're willing to go that far, we have got to stop these lunatics. And right now, Donald J. Trump, there's no question he is by far the most likely candidate to defeat Joe Biden. And I love RFK Jr. and his position. But I've been looking on the Democrat side of the betting odds, and because of the totalitarian nature of the Democrat Party, it looks very likely they're going to shut RFK Jr. out of the Democrat nomination process. They're going to shut him out. They're not going to have debates. They're going to rig the system. They're going to cheat against RFK. It is very unlikely at this point in my assessment that RFK is going to get the nomination, or that anyone's going to get the nomination on the D side other than Joe Biden or whoever they pick in his place. Because it's not democracy that the Democrats are running. It's not a fair system. It is a rigged system. And they're going to rig it against RFK. On the Republican side, the Republican Party would love to rig it against Trump. And they're trying to, because you have the Mike Pences out there, the traitors, the rhinos, that we're all sick and tired of. They're like Jim Hoff was just saying, time to cut ties with Republicans. What? I don't even have any ties with any Republicans. I don't believe in the Republican Party at all. The Republican establishment is just a bunch of traitors and jellyfish and spineless dweebs, just as bad as the Democrats in terms of what they're doing to this country. The only person that has a shot right now is Donald J. Trump. You look at the betting odds. I mean, Trump, number one, he's far and away the most likely to get the Republican nomination. There's nobody else the Republicans can come up with that's even close. DeSantis isn't even close. Vivek Ramaswamy is running a brilliant campaign. Got to give him that. But he's a distant second behind Trump, or maybe a third, depending on how you look at the polls. Trump is by far the most likely to get that Republican nomination. Of course, the Republican Party will go absolutely insane when that happens, but they can't stop it, and we need to tell the rhinos to go pound sand. We need to get Trump in place in the Republican Party, get him up against Joe Biden or whoever the Democrats are going to try to put up there for their Weekend at Bernie's candidate, and then we need to vote Trump into office, and we need to rally peacefully, vote watching campaigns all across the country. We need to document, we need to watch the ballot stuffing, or prevent it, report it. We got to stop the ballot mailing. We got to be involved in the counting. That's the only way that there's going to be anything close to a fair election. And even then, the Democrats can rig it. I mean, as Joe Biden said, they have the most elaborate vote fraud operation in the history of the country. He bragged about that. And he's not even going to campaign, because he can't. He's incapable of campaigning, because he thinks they're just going to rig it. But if we can overcome the rigging and get Trump into the White House, then we need to have a come to Jesus conversation with Donald J. Trump, which I'm sure will be happening from a lot of people. And we need to urge Trump to gut the entire executive branch of the government that's been weaponized against the people. Fire everybody at the DOJ. Everybody at the FBI, gut the EPA, the FDA, the ATF, the DEA, the USDA, all of them completely useless. Defund the CDC, take all the money away, fire them all, send them packing, shut it all down. That's the only way America has a future. And I don't think that there's anybody who is capable of doing that other than Donald J. Trump at this point. And I don't think he would have been willing to do that except for what he's being dragged through right now. I think this experience is teaching Trump what you and I knew many years ago, but Trump didn't believe until it happened to him. Trump was late to the awakening. You know that? He was late. When I was being censored and deplatformed and trying to reach Trump and say, hey, there's censorship happening, Trump wasn't worried about any censorship. You know? when I was saying, you know, watch out for this bioweapon that's being used, being deployed against the American people. Trump was out there saying, oh, it's no big deal. It'll be gone in a weekend or something. He's often late to realizing how horrendous these plans are, these schemes by the Democrats. And so sometimes it takes Trump a lot longer than we might like to come to his senses and realize what's going on. And also Trump has this fault of gathering people around him who are spineless traitors. Like Mike Pence, for example, and you know the attorneys that were in the White House and so on. Trump has got to stop this crazy habit of getting people in his White House and in his administration who are traitors and who are spineless cowards. That's got to stop. Otherwise, again, we have no future whatsoever. But Trump is our best shot right now at dismantling the deep state, and Trump knows it. And he said a week or two ago, says we either stop the deep state, or I think he said we either destroy the deep state or they destroy America, something like that. He finally gets it. So I still support RFK Jr. as the nominee on the Democrat side. I haven't given up on that. I'm just trying to be realistic that the Democrats themselves are so corrupt. Sadly, RFK Jr. has tied himself to a party run by crooks and fraudsters and thieves and criminals. That's just what the Democrat Party has become. It's not his fault. It's not the Democrat Party that his uncle ran, JFK, nor his father. It's just what the Democrats have become. And as that party of crooks and thieves and criminals, they will never let an honest man rise to power. Not under their party label, that's for sure. And they will do everything they can to stop both RFK and Donald J. Trump. And I still think the unbeatable combination would be a Trump-Kennedy ticket. And I know that Kennedy has said that will never happen. Well, I'm hoping he reconsiders after he's blacklisted out of the Democrat nomination process. When that's over, maybe he'll sign on and agree to be the vice president. I mean, I'm not betting on that. I'm not saying it's a likely thing, but there's a possibility of that. And that would be unbeatable. Trump Kennedy would beat, you know, Biden, whoever. Biden Harris would be a joke, of course, at this point. But Trump Kennedy could beat anybody that the Democrats could come up with. And we need Trump Kennedy to go after the deep state and dismantle the whole corrupt system. That's the only way we have a chance. This is it. This is the last desperate chapter for what we have left of our constitutional republic. And I'm not even sure we make it to the 2024 election. But then again, I wasn't confident we were going to make it to the last midterms either. So maybe we will. And we still have the Supreme Court in power right now that has the ability to help set some things straight, but they've been disappointing in other ways as well. But this is it. This is the last opportunity for us to save this nation. Otherwise, the Democrats burn it all down, just like they did Lahaina. They will burn it down. They will fry you, your family, your children. They will mutilate your children. They will steal your land. They will steal your bank accounts. They will take your wealth with a debt reset. They will destroy you, and they will replace you with illegals that they are bringing in the cities that they're building for those illegals, those cities which are forward operating bases, FOBs, basically, you know, beachheads in America for the invaders to take over. The Democrats and the Republican establishment are dedicated to seeing you dead and replaced. Understand. They are all signed up for a globalist anti-human death cult. Again, it's Democrats and it's the Republican establishment. They don't give a crap about humanity. They don't give a crap about you, your future, your freedom, your speech, nothing. All they care about is obediently following the commands of the globalists that tell them to exterminate the American people and replace every one of us. Those are their commands. And they are obediently following those commands. People like Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham. Pathetic failures of humanity. And the interview coming up here with David Dubin is going to give you even more wonderful news about famine and food price inflation that's happening and the crop failures. In fact, we're going to go to that now. I promise I would keep this a little bit shorter. And I'm going to make good on that promise. So, we're going to jump into that interview right now with David Dubin. And then tomorrow I've got another interview for you that I think you'll really enjoy as well. And more updates and headlines over the next 24 hours. All I can say is, folks, pray for America, pray for the innocent, Pray for God to intervene. Pray for truth and justice to emerge in all of this, because we are being steamrolled by the worst demonic anti-human criminals that this world has ever seen. And they're doing this in the name of the United States of America. And again, under their control has become the most evil, murderous regime on the planet, even exceeding the evil of communist China, if you can believe that. That's how disgusted I am with what the U.S. has become, at least its corrupt government, under these communist, fascist, murderous, anti-human traitors. Worse than communist China. All right, so here's the interview with David Dubine, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. All right, welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and we're joined today by David Dubine of Adapt 2030. David Dubine is an expert in the global food production situation and weather effects and crop yields and why we're headed into food scarcity and food inflation. And he's got a lot of updates for us here. Welcome to the show, David. It's great to have you on. As always, it's been a little too long, so I'm glad to have you on today.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. You know, and when you introduce like that, it's just so much to talk about. There's so many things, a tidal wave of different effects that we've seen. It's just really hard to even pick a point to choose to start the conversation, because you can see it's just vast and all-encompassing right now, these disturbances that we see geopolitically, economically, and then we bring it down into the food production, then the weather systems.
Well, is there any good news? Are there any reports of food crop yields that are awesome and the weather's just right and record harvests? Because I'm not hearing any of that, but are you hearing any of that?
I'm not. Well, there has to be specific microclimates that are reflecting that, but as an overall yield for the entire planet in terms of corn or wheat or whatnot, I don't see that. I just received the new USDA carryover stock report. And how much do you think in terms of millions of metric tons of carryover stock there are for the entire wheat crop for the United States from 2022 to 2023? Just give me a guess on how many million metric tons do you think are in the silos waiting just for an emergency in case we need it right now?
Well, I can tell you what I think there should be. I mean, there should be 40 to 50 million, but I imagine there's not.
Zero.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
There's actually two dashes there where there should be numbers, and I'm shocked. And then they show next year it's going to be something like 600 million bushels coming in, or going to go from zero to 600 million. But when you look at the U.S. Wheat Associates, when they're forecasting out for their sales and exports out, it shows even leaner or less wheat exports and sales than this year. So I'm looking at these numbers saying, well, there has to be something is disconnected here. When they're showing a zero carryover stock for U.S. wheat in total, and then next year it's showing even less for the sales availability, then that means this year's wheat harvest is down, and there's some non-communication of really how far down the wheat crop's going to be in terms of harvest. It's been in that drought zone for so long now. So.
Well, right, and I'm also reading, of course, corn yields are horribly devastated across the Midwest in particular because of drought. Conditions in places like Missouri are just off the charts atrocious. I think as much as 80% of the corn crop has been destroyed in Missouri, at least, or not, maybe not entirely destroyed, but at least partially destroyed, like not in good condition, let's say. What numbers are you seeing for corn and soy and alfalfa and things like that?
Still getting around 70% in the drought affected areas of the total corn grown in the United States, 70% of it, or 63 to 70%, somewhere in there, is in drought still. And that reflects the soybean crop also. And you need to add in the damage from the derecho, that sideline wind event that stretched halfway across the United States from north to south from Canadian border, which included parts of Canada, all the way down into, say, the panhandle of Texas, and that sweeping wind at 100 miles an hour. You know, some of those crops did rebound, but a lot of them did not. You know, we lost some of our corn here a couple storms ago, and it's just, even though I, you know, tried to put a mound of dirt around it and bring it back upright again, it just slumped right back over. You know, once you damage plants and you break that cellular structure in their stalks, they just don't come back. I don't care how much you try to. That nature is the way it is. When something's broken far enough, it just cuts the loss. And I think we're seeing a lot of that. Now, how's that going to be explained away, though, is more the question, or used as a fear point?
Well, exactly. But I want to ask you about grocery store prices, the impacts here, because of course people have already experienced horrendous food inflation over the last 2 years. And from what you're saying right now, it seems like that food inflation is going to get even worse. And maybe inflation is not the right word, because that's a monetary word. And there is monetary, you know, debasement of the dollar happening at the same time. But we're talking about scarcity of the food supply leading to price increases. So what can we expect to see over the next 6 months in the grocery stores?
More of the same, but probably less choice as well. So when you start to look at the overall impact of things happening across the planet, especially in the geopolitic arena, you know, the availability of foods from certain regions that will not be exported, it's going to have an effect. So think about Turkey, for example. So anything that was a Turkish-based food is probably not going to make its way to the States anymore. And you might go, well, big whoop, that's at a sort of an ethnic supermarket, whatever. But then you look at the cutting off of all the rice coming out of India, non-basmati, and then you go, well, look, even if you wanted to go to an Indian supermarket or even some of these Asian supermarkets or whatnot, there's rice isn't there. You saw those people fighting for rice in Costco.
Yeah.
So it's just the amount of availability of products that are going to be on our store shelves. And I wonder how they're going to do it in addition to what they've done already, because I know some people who are into the fast moving goods arena, FMOC, and they were saying that what they're doing is shrinking the actual length of the aisles themselves to make it still appear full. But if you're going to subtract 5 feet off the end of each aisle, then you subtracted a complete one or two aisles out of the entire supermarket. And that's why I encourage everybody to look on the floor, because you can't mask that, because when they're originally set in place, they usually have to drill into the tiles. You know, you don't want any lawsuits of things tipping over. So look for that as an indication on either side of the aisles, if they've been shrunken, to try to make it appear that things are just as full as they were. But when you look at that in a percentage basis, well, maybe not. Prices up and less availability of the foods moving forward would be my best guess on that.
So the typical American consumer right now is pressed on the fact that a larger percentage of their disposable income is going to food right now, but yeah, also a larger percentage is going to rent. So rent is still very high and going up in most areas. Things are becoming unaffordable. A lot of consumer goods, the prices are just insanely through the roof. But I think in food, it's the acceleration of the price increases is higher than in any other area. We are also being told that there are efforts, or we're seeing these efforts by governments around the world to try to suppress meat production and animal product production. And David, my question to you is, with the shutting down of farms in Europe and the attacks on farming in the United States, and, you know, regulatory attacks, EPA attacks, and so on, aren't we also going to see animal-derived products facing, you know, even more scarcity and heightened prices compared to vegetables and fruits and so on?
Yeah, I'll take that in two different directions with you as well. So to address that first point there, absolutely. You know, you think about the scarcity of meats, but you also need to think about quality in the meats. So on my radio program that we were talking about as well, is we think the next big phase is going to be mRNA-free meats, because look through the last 10, 15 years, people are seeking out antibiotic, anti-hormone, no hormone in the meat. Well, the next obvious thing is going to be mRNA, which is the modified RNA delivery system that's in the meat and that they get of. But go to the crops as the main thing. Now, I'm going to be a world government. Now, walk with me through the mind exercise here of being a world government. You understand these changes are in and our jet streams are moving because of effects and changes electromagnetically from our sun, from the star, that big yellow thing over there to the left. That's changing on at least a 400-year cycle, many say a 2,000-year cycle. Now, what that's really affecting, if you look at the different maps of where crops are grown across the planet, not all of everything grown is food. There's a huge percentage that is for animal feed and for ethanol production. Now, if you start to look at those areas, you see a predominant number of them at 40 degrees north and above. That would include Canada, parts of the northern United States, northern China, all of the southern part of Australia. And you start to look at the feed availability for the animals. Now, they might say one thing out of the side of their face over here, oh, we need to eat less meat, there's more CO2, there's more methane, blah, blah, blah. But are they really trying to mask the effect of, we just won't be able to grow enough animal feed? So how do you come out to a planet and tell them that with a straight face? Oh, by the way, the jet streams are shifting on a 400-year cycle we didn't tell you about. You could have got ready 20 years ago, but we just won't be able to grow enough animals because literally there won't be enough animal feed for them. So we're going to have to reduce the number of herds to keep up and equal the downsteps each year with the lost grain crops, specifically for animal feeds. You know, that's a hard sell for a lot of people. So if you swing the pendulum over and lump that under global warming, it gives a perfect excuse why there needs to be less meat, why there is less meat. Ask yourself, why is there less meat? You know, just take Ukraine as a perfect example. They're going to lose at least 50% of their fuel production this year. That's at best estimate. That's like a rosy USDA figure that they're going to be able to get 50% fuel production. I'm like, no way, maybe 8%, 10%.
Right.
But just that alone, on mainly they're an animal feed exporter. So just even if you were to take Ukraine completely off the world market, somewhere animals are going to have to decrease in number because that amount of feed coming from that country won't be able to satiate the need to keep those animals alive. And this is where we get into this huge, you know, just run around in word sauce here. And, you know, there needs to be, you're going to have to know where your farmers are, anybody out there, truly. You're going to need to know where your food source comes from. Make friends with those farmers, buy the meat locally. You can no longer rely on supermarkets for your deliveries.
Yeah, that's a key point. We've encouraged that too. Community supported agriculture, knowing your neighbors. Maybe you have neighbors who have cows, and I do. I mean, not right next door, but a friend who slaughtered a cow, and well, actually a steer in this case, and I went in on them with that, so I got part of a steer in the freezer, and I know that steer was not injected with mRNA, as you said, but you know, there's been a lot of concern about the fact that the USDA, under its organic certification program and the National Organic Standards Board, the NOSB, currently does allow mRNA injections and genetically engineered vaccines into animals that are considered organic. That is currently allowed. And it's horrifying to a lot of people. You know, Organic Eye put out a report on that recently, and the ANH USA did a report. I talked about it. I know you have. When we think about organic products, animal-derived products, milk and meat and cheese, you would think that they wouldn't allow mRNA injections that can alter, you know, genetic material in the cows, but they do. And so doesn't that mean that we can't even trust organic alone? I mean,
that's exactly what it means.
The
USDA, so you are solely responsible for your food source. Please understand that. You know, a lot of people want to slough it off. Government will take care of me. Supermarket will take care of me. We are so far past that stage now that if you are not getting ready for a pioneering lifestyle, seeing the systems break down like they are in real time in front of you everywhere across the planet, you're going to have to take more responsibility for your own actions and to keep your family safe. There's no way around this any longer. I mean, I've been speaking at this for years about the changes in the sun are changing the jet streams to the point we won't be able to grow enough food on the planet. And for, you know, these world leaders to come out and try to, you know, pull different parts of our food system down on purpose, but then to contaminate it when we need it most, that's non-human right there. And for all these excuses coming out, why there's not enough animals, oh, there's this CO2, that, now they want to dim the sun. And Mike, I heard you talking about that on the program over on InfoWars earlier. You know, and then all you have to do is affect the rain patterns, and then you truly can wipe out humanity or parts of it by not allowing itself to produce enough food or clean foods. Because I really don't know the repercussions of when you start to put vast amounts of that in your body, of eating that type of mRNA tainted foods. But we are really going to start to need to take responsibility for our own intake of our food, our production of food, the community understanding where your foods are. And again, I'll take half a steer. I'll take half a carcass with you. I'll take a quarter. And, you know, if you get four people together, you can buy a steer. It's going to be a little much for all the freezers for one person. You know, those animals weigh 1,200 pounds. And save the organ meat for your dogs. That's incredibly
helpful.
Oh,
yeah. No, I have.
Nothing should go wasted.
I request all the chewable bones and everything for my dogs. Yeah. So, you know, we get all the bones and organ meats and everything. You know, the bones have, I mean, we, we don't waste the animal, that's for sure. You know, an animal died so that we can live, so that we can eat. And you know, we do honor that relationship. But I don't trust the factory farms, the factory cow, you know, confined cattle operations, the CAFOs. I don't trust any of that because I know they're injected with all this crazy stuff. And it's probably going to get worse. And by the way, David, I'm sure you're aware of this, but there's something called RNA interference technology that has been developed to use as a kind of pesticide so that it causes bugs to become infertile. And this RNA interference technology can be targeted to any species, including humans, by the way. So they could be putting infertility RNA fragments in the food supply. I'm not saying that they are doing it right now, but it's very possible. It's already been proven they can do this just to cause infertility. And since infertility and depopulation appear to be the goal of the globalists right now, I wouldn't be surprised at all if that becomes part of the so-called vaccines that go into these animals. You think that's possible?
Yeah, and you know, those pesticides that you're speaking about that disrupt that function, they never go into the ponds or into the streams or any types of fish life would be, or into over fish farms or any types. Nah, they would never do that. No, that can't penetrate the water surface. So Mike, I would ask you the question then. You know far better than I, this mRNA inside the meat, like if I consume that at a regular rate that we do, because we have sheep and we sold them off. We're going to trade one back and get it for meat because I don't want to eat the sheep I raised. So I've been trading them off to the neighbors, and he's going to be breeding them out here coming up in the October. So I'm going to get them on the land over there and get them used to. But, you know, we eat the meats we eat either come from the Amish, or we know that farmers who raise them, and we know they don't inject. But I'm curious, if I were to go to the store and get some mRNA injected meat, like, how many times would I need to eat that before there's an effect on my body? And then what kind of effects could you expect to see in your body? So then you go, whoa, that's an effect that, you know, it's turning my skin red, or it's, you know, giving me lung inflammation, or I cough every time after I eat it, or it's something like this. Because you're definitely well more versed than I am in that.
Well, look, my guess is you'd get a torrent of autoimmune disorders because, you know, there's going to be some transfection that takes place from the foreign RNA that gets incorporated into your chromosomes at some level. Not every fragment, not every cell, obviously, but a few of your cells will start to incorporate this genetic material. You know, we do share genetic material with our environment, with our food, with, you know, even viruses, you know, around us and so on. We're actually sort of genetically quite porous, it turns out. And then as a result, inside your own body, your cells are going to be manufacturing foreign proteins that are not human and that are not supposed to be in your body. These foreign proteins, depending on your physiology, are going to trigger all kinds of, like a cascade of inflammatory responses and autoimmune disorders, is my guess. That could be diagnosed as, you know, myocarditis or, you know, cardiovascular disorders or neurological disorders or neuromuscular disorders. So no doctor out there is going to say, oh yeah, this is mRNA in your meat. They're going to say, oh, you suddenly have like muscular dystrophy or something. And that's the way it's going to end up showing up. I think that's, or, you know, suddenly you have this autoimmune disorder. Suddenly you have this skin disorder. Suddenly you have leprosy. Did you know that leprosy is one of the most notable side effects of these COVID vaccine, these mRNA injections, is causing leprosy. I mean,
yeah, seeing that come back, that was relegated to an island in the like 1800s, disappeared. You know, Molokai, which was over in Hawaii, it's just one island over from Maui. You know, they had a huge leprosy colony or leper colony over on Molokai during the 1800s.
That's right.
I mean, that's a disease of the way past.
No, I visited that colony.
After all the inoculations,
I went there.
And injections.
No, I saw that in person. I know exactly what you're talking about. And you're right. But now it's coming back, and it's coming back because of these injections. Now, how much food do you have to eat for this transfection to occur? It's not clear. I don't think anybody knows. But that's the point. It's some kind of grand, crazy experiment on the people. It's like, hey, let's just infect the whole food supply and see what happens. You know, it could be genetically catastrophic for the human race.
Yeah, and it's interesting how it dovetails right into this transition phase of the sun's magnetic fields changing enough now to bend the jet streams and cloud cells. And then after that Hunga Tonga eruption with 10% more moisture. And actually, they've come out with some new numbers since I first did all those reports, because it agreed on was 10% more moisture. Now it's up to 14% more moisture in the atmosphere.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So you have to think about how that is going to morph weather patterns too, because I just really try to put it in the simplest of terms. If you're driving your car through a foggy night in a, you know, at the bottom of a valley somewhere, how dense that air is when you're driving through the fog compared to driving through a very cool night in the middle of the desert. Like, the density of the air is going to move at different velocities or different speeds, and it's going to create drag in some areas. And I think that's why we're seeing all these record floods across the planet right now. Is the jet streams have moved enough, and the cloud cells are now combining on each other with all this extra moisture, and it just hasn't really found its flow in the atmosphere yet. It will, but it's going to take a little bit of time, you know, like a decade or more. And luckily, each year that this water starts to, you know, this water that was injected up, it's going to begin coming out of the atmosphere, but some, you know, edges of the classroom over here will say, oh, it's going to stay up there forever. And others are saying, no, it's going to rain out after 3 to 5 years as it normally would for ash coming down from a volcanic eruption. So either of those, you know, we're still looking at a multi-year event here of disrupted ecosystems, food production, and what you consider as weather stability is going to greatly change. I mean, the amplification, if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry, you just haven't gone outside or been paying attention, at least in my opinion.
No, you're exactly right. I'm glad you're addressing these points, because on one hand, we have all these weather weapons and geoengineering weapons and crop weapons, you know, the mRNA, for example. On the other hand, there's this unknown factor of what happens from these mad science experiments that governments are conducting on the world. But what we do know for sure is that the lack of stability, the predictability in weather patterns and rainfall and so on, the lack of stability is what devastates crops. So the globalists, they don't need to really even know what's going to happen, as long as they know it's chaotic, right? If they can just create, you know, temperature chaos or rainfall chaos, then they know they're going to achieve the famine they want to achieve.
Now in Kansas tonight, and what's today, the 15th, they're going to be approaching some record lows into the 50s and possibly high 40s tonight. So down through what we consider our grain growing areas, they're going to be at that very edge of hitting record low temperatures since the 1800s.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. So that was something that just came across a news feed, because I try to go through Twitter and, you know, look for different temperature. I knew there was going to be something strange. You know, a lot of people were talking about the year without a summer after the Tonga eruption, including myself. And I was like, well, we're on the opposite side of it. We're in a different hemisphere. That was a water vapor eruption, not an ash eruption, but it was ash in, you know, so you're getting a double layering of different, you know, types of particulates up there. So I was considering, like, you know, the summer of strangeness or weather discombobulation is more of a better point to it, where it was really cold in the Northeast coming into the summer, and now it's really hot in some places, but now it's going ultra cold. And then, you know, it's this flip-flop between the systems. And okay, I'll just make sure I was still on there.
Yeah, right? You're still on.
I dropped off. But that flip-flop between the systems now is, again, this chaos. And if I could come to these fires that have just started the last day or so in the northern part of Canada, and this is the Northern Maritimes and up that north area, that's going to send a huge amount of smoke up into where a lot of those low systems are developing from the Arctic. And what they're going to do in turn is then grab that smoke and the particulates, and as they make their way further south, they're going to create a lot more rain than normal. But the way our normal flows go with that system at this time of the year, where does all that rain end up? Well, right over the grow zone. And it's so interesting how it's flipping from 3-year drought into muddy, flooded fields.
Wow.
Right at the time they're coming into harvest. So keep your eyes on Alberta, Saskatchewan, etc., because they're going to be harvesting before we would somewhere down Panhandle, Texas, Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma. You know, they're going to be harvesting a good 3 weeks ahead of us, maybe a month. So keep your eyes on what's happening with the flooded fields, because if you were going to use a weather weapon, now the science is probably not exactly perfect to know where every molecule of something is going to move to in an atmospheric flow.
Sure, right.
But if you get it good enough, and you knew that amount of smoke in the Northern Maritimes up there is going to have and get wrapped up in the lows, that's then going to create particulates that'll create massive amounts of rain. And you can sort of steer it generally into the area where the crops would be. You don't have to destroy the crops. You just have to stop the ability for the farm machinery getting in the fields to harvest it.
Good point. Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, along with that, the destruction of the energy infrastructure as well feeds into that, makes it more difficult, you know, for transportation and harvesting and fuel for tractors and so on. Let me mention your radio show at Revolution Radio, and that's revolution.radio, by the way. Tell us about your show when it airs.
We do Thursday night, 10 p.m. to midnight on Studio A, and Ransom Godwin and myself, what we do is we take that feed right there and then we send it out to 8 different platforms streaming. Because we really feel this message that, you know, Mike and I have been talking about today, but we have 2 hours at a time where Ransom takes a different look at geopolitics, and I take a look at what we're talking about currently, and we mesh somewhere in the middle, and a lot of times we talk about AI and the way things are moving, and it's just different levels of society that we see transition through the week, or some of these general larger topics on how are radio communications, like for me, we went through the all-time largest record rainfall last night here where I live. And the water treatment plant was 3 feet underwater. So they turned off all the water to the town. And my main broke out here. It's like geysing up out of, like, looks like a spring coming out of the front of our property there. But one thing I didn't have programmed in my ham radio was the water bureau. I got the fire. I got the rescue. I know where those channels are on my radio, on my ham radio for the local community. But I never thought to put in the water board in there. Never thought of that. But now, you know, I'm trying to reassess some of these things about, and also so much flood water came down that even on my own property to escape my backfield, it was 15 feet on either side of the culvert that was spilling over.
Oh, wow.
Like I couldn't have gotten out of here. And then down in front of us, we have a pond, which 3 springs go into. Normally it's springs, but this time it was the largest ever recorded rainfall running off the mountain into that same pond. So all the roads, quarter mile, half mile in either direction were, you know, feet deep. There's no way to drive out of that. So, you know, I'm just got to reassess a lot of water damage here because, you know, fire is one thing, but water is quite the other thing. And I'm really starting to see some holes in my plans out here, and also, you know, getting my readiness bumped up here in a massive flood like that. 6.5 inches in 3 hours is what we got dumped on last night here. So
that's,
these are the kind
normal
of things that we would discuss in radio, you know, getting your preparedness up and these kind of general things. And I really want to grow the program. So thanks for, you know, talking about that, because I really think this message is necessary. And the reason we stream on all these platforms is because we can leave the comment boards open, uncensored there. So you can, people that are on there can comment within the comment boards uncensored, so that you can exchange information. You can. So we're trying to get the software together so we can take all the chat boards off all the feeds and then put them into one repository so we can get everything churning at the same time off of our program.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at. So thanks for talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're putting out a lot of good information. You do a lot of research to really get to the bottom of what's going on out there. Let's talk about Lahaina, the town in Maui here for a minute. So the drought conditions were allowed to happen, perhaps engineered, so that everything was ready to be set on fire. And then all it took was, you know, a spark or maybe a, you know, direct energy weapon or arson or something. As long as the conditions were present, everything was going to burn the minute the first spark was let loose. And so just by controlling weather systems and moving moisture atmospherically to somewhere else, whoever's doing this can create conditions that are perfect for mass fires and mass death, which is what just happened there. I mean, those people had, you know, maybe minutes to get everything that they were ever going to save, including their dog and their child, and try to get out of their home. And some people had no options because their children were home alone and the parents were at work and the roads were blocked by the authorities. So you were just screwed in that situation. The fire was coming over the mountain and sweeping right into you. There's nothing you can do about it. But that can, those conditions can be engineered, correct?
They can. And then, you know, the one thing that we did talk about last time on our program was you might have the conditions for the fire, but if I could spark a fire, it doesn't guarantee that it's going to go in that exactly where, you know, let's say you were planning, and let's say I'm going to do mind experiment here, but they were planning to burn out Lahaina. And, you know, when you go further back into the cane fields up there and you try to light those fires, it might go to the left or to the right, but if you were using an AI algorithm to pinpoint the exact ignition points that you would need with the wind trajectory and with the wind speed, like that could be gamed out how many kilometers back you need to go. Because if you were too close, it wouldn't get hot enough fast enough. And if you were too far away, it might miss the area. So what scares me a little bit is somebody has gamed this thing out after the conditions are set. Now it seems to be another whole level above that using AI to figure out where the ignition points would be to create the greatest amount of damage and funnel that fire to within feet of where you want it to be.
Yep.
And that's scary. That's downright scary.
And that's the real estate that certain people want to get their hands on so they can, you know, build high rises and have a surveillance grid, you know, smart city right there. Hawaii, as you know, Hawaii is ground zero for genetic engineering experiments in crops. You know, the GMOs have been all over the Big Island and parts of Maui for years. And you know, Hawaii is looked at like a giant experiment by corporate and government powers of the world. And I think they just made a decision. They didn't want Lahaina to exist as a small town anymore. They just wanted the real estate, giant grab, just burn it out.
Yeah, I can add a point. As a matter of fact, I just saw that they're going to be building from the ground up a 15-minute city there.
Yeah.
Now, you know, yeah, the 15-minute cities, you could establish that sort of thing, you know, and they tried in England. But there's a lot of people who live there, and a lot of people will say no. But this is the first time in our recorded history right now that they have planned to, from ground zero, from completely destroyed, build a new 15-minute city from scratch with nothing there to interfere in the development of it, the plans of it, the planning of it, the execution of it, the size of the buildings, the width, the scope of the roads, whatever. They're going to go from zero to 100% built 15-minute city right there in Lahaina.
Yeah, exactly. And
that's insane.
That's a prison camp system is what that is. And so they're going to turn Maui into a prison camp island, basically, you know, a giant Pacific prison. And as I pointed out, they can control it so easily there because there's only one road that goes around the island, you know, one main road that just encircles it, right? So they can block that road or they can put checkpoints on it very easily. And also the food supply. You know this, David. Rather than growing the foods that the indigenous populations, the Polynesians, used to grow and live on, right now Hawaii imports most of its food. And they don't grow the food that they need to eat, which seems crazy to me. Because if you wanted to grow food, Maui would be the best place in the world to grow food. You know, it's like you could grow almost anything there. And yet they still have to import food from the continental United States. So you can control the food supply and you can have rationing and you can have famine. You can engineer it all right there because, well, how's anybody going to get any food? It's not like they can just drive somewhere else and get food. No, it's all going to come in by boat or plane, but usually it's by boat. So it's an easily controllable prison camp.
Yeah, you'd have to grow your own or what they call poke fish when you go out spearfishing, you know, but then they could make that illegal. You can't do anything on the reefs or whatnot.
Right.
And to bring a point back here, you know, one of the main things was there was a lack of communication. And, you know, people didn't even have ham radios or CB radios, marine radios. Luckily, if you had a boat, maybe you did. Maybe you had an onshore handheld. But was number one thing that keeps popping up again and again and again, it's not about the food and the water, it's about the lack of communications. Like that road that goes around, if you go past Honolulu Bay and then up to like Three Sisters, once you come back down that little tiny bay to go surfing in there, that road continues all the way down to Kahului or on the backside there. But man, it's windy and twisty, hairpinny. But nobody knew it was open to get out of there. They were all trying to go south when they could have just gone north and, you know, circled around the island and the top there, but no communications. So I can't reiterate it again. You know, I'm scolding myself for not having the Water Bureau in my ham radio set for the community, for their, for whatever channel they're on. Like, think about that. There was no communication to even, you gotta, really, anybody out there, your number one next buy thing, if you're gonna get something for your preparedness, has to be radio communications. I'm really starting to go, wow, this is such an important thing that's overlooked. Everybody talks about the food, the water, the metals, the ammo, and all these things, but the communications. How do you even know what's going on outside if you don't have that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, one of our sponsors is a satellite phone store. And in fact, I'm going to have Tina on from the satellite phone store to talk about what they're doing in Hawaii. But, you know, the local cell towers didn't work. And, you know, there are like 2,000 people missing. And if you had a satellite phone, you could at least, you know, call a loved one and say, I'm okay. Or, yeah, I've got the kids, I'm okay, you know, we're good. But without that communication, like you say, there's nothing you can do. And in that case, those fires swept through and burned up people's homes where they might have had other things stored, like, you know, firearms and food and ammunition and what have you. And there was one family that had a fireproof safe that was still standing after the fires. But by the time they got in to try to get the stuff out of the safe, it had already been looted and opened, and everything was gone inside the safe. So, you know, I mean, most safes are not very robust anyway. They can be defeated in a couple of minutes with a drill. But, you know, that's why you got to store some things underground, folks. I'm serious, you know. The things that were stored underground in Lahaina did not get burned and can still be retrieved, but it's just more work.
Yeah, caching. Not a lot of people think about caching, because eventually, you know, once you fill up your house with stuff, you got stuff bursting literally out of the rafters. You're going to have to figure out either build a barn to put it in or build another structure to put in, or you're going to get it out on your property somewhere and cache it. Yeah. That's not a very talked about item in prepping, is caching.
Oh, I've talked about it quite a bit in my books and so on, but specifically because of fires. You know, we had bad fires in Central Texas in 2011. Very bad fires, the Lost Pines fires, as they were known. And I know people who had a whole collection of firearms just melted, you know, unusable. And people who had safes with valuables in the safe, but the thing got so hot, you know, the house got so hot that the inside of the safe all got cooked anyway. So, you know, there's all your documents, your, I don't know, your $400 million in bearer bonds. From Die Hard, or whatever you have
in your
safe.
Those? I'm looking for those.
Yeah. I mean, they're gone, you know? So caching is the answer to this, but you got to know it's got to be watertight, you know, but then it's fireproof and it's weatherproof and so on. But it's a lot of effort for sure. And caching food's really difficult because, you know, the mice like to get into that.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Like, you mentioned a phone call using a satellite phone. What about that bivy stick, you know, where you can still send text messages back and forth to each other?
Yep.
As a second alternative to actually making a physical phone call, or, you know, physical phone call, well, to somebody versus just texting it with a bivy stick.
Yeah, let me bring them up, actually. SAT123.com is the website here. And if you scroll down there, they have these, like you said, the bivy sticks. And I've got several of these, and they do. They let you send text messages via satellite, and you simply use your phone to compose and read the messages. But these can send and receive texts just like a regular phone, but they don't use any cell towers at all. And so if you can't afford a satellite phone, the bivy stick is very affordable. And the thing about the bivy stick is you can also program it to alert people to your location if you press the emergency button. And it'll alert people, it'll send out emails, I think it'll send texts to people with your GPS location, if you choose that. And that's, you know, like snowboarders use it, you know, I'm stuck, oh, there's an avalanche coming, I'm stuck in an avalanche, you know, boom, here's my location, come dig me out, it, you know, if you can get that signal out before you get buried by the avalanche, I guess. But in the case of Lahaina, you know, this would have been real handy to have on your boat. You know, even a little rickety boat. If you could get out to your boat, you're sitting there just offshore a little bit, you know, you're not getting burned up and you're pressing the panic button, boom, GPS coordinates, you know, the Coast Guard's going to find out that you're out there needing rescue. So it's a lifesaver.
Yeah, and we're going to have to be rethinking a lot of things here with the intensity of the storms increasing. You know, because the water thing that was happening here in town, there's a well-known spring that's, I can't get to it right now because the roads are too flooded. But there are a lot of people who can get there. And apparently there's a U-turn when you get there so you can drive in and out. There's people coming in from both sides, and they were apparently sending a police officer out there to try to control it because so many people were in line that when people facing each other, like, no, I'm the next one. No, I'm the next one. I'm like, wait, there's not even an emergency yet. And you guys are already bickering out there about who gets water next.
Oh man.
It's an endless supply of water coming. And things been running for 130 years, this same spring. It's open to the public. But now I'm just thinking, you know, now if they need to put a police officer out there, and what are they going to do? They're going to encapsulate it like, oh, it costs too much problem. You can't go out there. Oh, you can. We'll have to meter it. You know, there's just a lot of things to think about.
Well, how can people
with these emergencies and disasters and your actual supplies that are going to be needed, or how are you going to procure those supplies over the long term? You know, I just said the fires and then this storm that I've lived through last night and thing, it just made me rethink a huge amount of details of what I'm preparing for.
Yeah, think about this. There's so much rain falling out of the sky, and yet people have no water. I mean, how crazy is that? People need to collect a little bit of rainwater for emergency use. You know, it's not that difficult. You just direct a gutter or a downspout into a barrel. And, you know, at least you could have a barrel. And if you're worried about contamination, it's real simple. Chlorine dioxide, folks. Chlorine dioxide. Yeah. I mean, you just, you throw a couple of chlorine dioxide tablets in there, and there's that company online, safrax.com. Let me bring it up. SAFRAX.com. They make, you know, you can buy 500 tablets for $30. And I made the mistake of mentioning them once in my podcast, and they got backlogged like a month on orders.
Put me in front of the line.
Yeah, but man, if you want to collect water and you want to sterilize it, it's chlorine dioxide. It's so simple and it's dirt cheap. And, or, you know, get yourself a water filter. But if you don't have $300 or $400 for a high end, you know, Berkey filter or whatever, spend $30, get some chlorine dioxide and pop the tablets in there and wait. And the chlorine dioxide sterilizes the water and you're good. You know, it's not that pricey or difficult to have backup water, but people just don't prepare.
And if you want to go that route too, get a 1 gallon Sawyer. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do. If you've ever been camping, yeah, there's an enormous amount. Like we have 500 gallons just behind the barn there. They're totally full. It overspilled last night and I got all this.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, a barn filled up and like, it was just so, like the whole front field filled about this deep full of water. And not only that, but it was just in the barn, even though it had drainage. It was like a joke. I just didn't even want to go out there and look this morning because it was just.
Yeah, well, but, I mean.
You know, having the water, you know, again, like. This conversation is so valuable to share with people because we're all going to need to be on the same page immediately. It's not like you have another, you know, 2 years to try to wait it out or something. It's here now and it's evolving every day. And it just seems at some point, it seems like the shoe is going to drop.
Yeah.
Mike, you and I had said that, you know, last year at the end of the year coming into December that we thought by now that something greater on the disruption, you know, level would have happened by now, but it hasn't. So I just, you know, at some point it is going to cascade and then maybe that'll be the next baseline. But
well, there had been a lot of buffering in the system, you know, a lot of excess food from previous years that has run out. Like you said, with the wheat carryover, it's zero now. And, you know, there had been a lot of excess disposable income in the system. Not anymore. People are broke. So there's a limit to how far you can push systems before things start to break. And by the way, there's also a limit to this show today. I'm sorry to bring this up, but we're just about out of time. So I got to ask you to give us your final wrap-up thoughts on today's interview.
Yeah, the Hunga Tonga eruption is going to be a big one. Like the penguins are already washing up dead along the southern shores. Thousands of them in different instances. I've been doing the research to see about the UVB radiation and the effects on penguins' eyes and how that might affect their hunting. We'll come to find out their prey also will go to different depths or levels within the ocean to escape that same UVB radiation. So if it's affecting the penguins already and the prey that the penguins are eating, when it comes into planting season, what do you think it's going to do to the insects' eyes? What do you think it's going to do to the plants themselves? Now, this is going to be, it's this UVB radiation, ozone hole, Hunga Tonga is going to get so much bigger in the news feed. So just expect it. But know that barley is the greatest affected crop with the UVB radiation in the southern hemisphere. And you could expect yields in the southern hemisphere to be down 20 to 30% just on an average basis. I don't care what crop it is, because the wider that ozone hole goes, it's going to be the biggest ever recorded because of all the ice crystals and the breakdown of ozone from that same Hunga Tonga water vapor eruption event. So that's going to be another thing they're going to try to push fear with. Just understand it's a natural cycle.
Yeah.
It's not man-made.
Yeah, exactly. What's the name of your other podcast aside from Adapt 2030? What is it?
Many Ice Age Conversations. And you can find that anywhere podcast or hosted across the net.
Okay.
I've been doing that for years. I think I'm at episode 550 or something like that.
Many Ice Age Conversations. Okay, that's great. And then revolution.radio is where your broadcast is on Thursday evenings. And David, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us today. Invaluable information. People need to get prepared. Food scarcity is going to get a lot worse, and food prices will, of course, follow accordingly. So thank you for joining us today. And I know people will share this podcast.
Great. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you so much, David. And keep up the great work. And his channel, by the way, is called Adapt 2030 on multiple video platforms, including Brightown as well. You can search for it there. And David Dubine is one of the top researchers out there who's tracking all this stuff. And if you're not paying attention to this, you're going to get caught by surprise with scarcity and food inflation and other horrible things. So stay informed and feel free to repost this interview on other platforms as well. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech platform that I built so that we can have uncensored conversations like this one today. God bless you all. Take care. All right. I don't know if you've tried the liposomal products at healthrangerstore.com, but if you haven't, it's definitely something to check out. I've got a little selection here on my desk. We have liposomal glutathione. It's very popular there on the left. And of course, the liposomal encapsulation of the molecules enhances its delivery and absorption. We also have liposomal turmeric plus resveratrol. That's the one in the center there. And man, that is a very powerful combination right there, turmeric or curcumin plus resveratrol. Curcumin being from turmeric, that's why I said that. But it's curcumin plus resveratrol, amazing molecules in combination in a liposomal format that makes it very high potency. And then finally on the right, we have liposomal B12, which is something that it's very easy to be deficient in B12 if you don't eat a lot of meat products. And even some meat eaters can be deficient as well. So check these out, get educated, go to healthrangerstore.com. On the website, you'll find these products and a whole lot more. And remember that every purchase helps support this platform and this program, and that everything that we sell has been laboratory tested, and that we test for heavy metals, glyphosate, and for many products, we test for aflatoxins and atrazine coming up, as well as microbiology on almost everything. So there is no product selection available anywhere in the world in terms of nutritional supplements and superfoods that is subjected to the rigorous testing, the routine testing that we do with our own in-house mass spec lab. Nobody tests like we do. And so this is the cleanest product line anywhere on the planet. And you'll really appreciate it. It will benefit you greatly, and you'll be able to help support this program and this platform as well. And we thank you for your support. You're really going to enjoy these products. Check them out at healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for your support.